Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the NCHG Open Policy Meeting on the 31st of August 2016. On the call today, we have Aidan Ferdinand, David Cake, Yul Helsingos, Marilia Nassil, Ed Morris, Niels Ten Over, Rachel Pollack, Rafik Damat, Renu Maike, Stefania Milan, Stefani Tervanen, Avery Doria, Tatiana Propina, Sander Frankel, Joy Lidicott, and from staff, we have myself, Mariam Bakoshi. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much. Over to you, Stefani.
Thank you, Mariam. So for the record, this is Stefani Tarani speaking. And welcome, everybody, and my apologies for the very late announcement of the time of this call. But without further ado, our agenda is mainly tomorrow's council meeting preparation. And you see in the Adobe screen its agenda. So let's move on to that. The first item of substance, there is opening remark on review of focus areas, updates on key themes, topics. I'm not sure if anybody has any information that you'd like to add. And apparently not. Then there's consent agenda, confirming date for the selection of the GAC GNSO liaison, which seems clear enough. I'm not sure if anybody wants to comment on this. For example, that actually selecting the liaison is a matter of interest to us, definitely. But tomorrow it will not be discussed, I understand, only confirming the dates. So that does not seem to need more discussion at this point. The fourth item we have tomorrow is the council vote on the approval of the recommendation from the Standing Committee of Improvements. I think we'll leave that until later in the hope that Amar will join us because he's presenting the motion. We'll get back to that later when hopefully Amar is joining us. Okay, then let's move to the item 5, adoption of implementation advisory group recommendation to upgrade procedure on who is conflicts with national law. We would really like to have Stephanie Perrin on that, and she's not with us there. Does anybody else feel up to talking about this? None of our councillors present with anything to say here?
Hi, Stefani, this is Marilia speaking.
Okay, please go ahead, Marilia.
Yeah, do you want a summary on the topic of privacy, right?
If I yes.
Correctly?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so the motion that we have of us tomorrow is a motion to approve a report that introduces some changes on the previous GNSO-approved policy on conflict between the RAA contract and national privacy laws. This policy was approved some years ago, and in spite of having a policy in place, this policy has never been evoked by the registrars before, which is one reason to believe that there was some problem and that the policy could be sort of improved. The mandate of this group that has just produced the report in front of us and did not extend to the point of changing the policy that was in place. So actually that was a very narrow mandate. And the report that they produced, basically what it does is to verify what would be the additional triggers that could justify that registrars would not comply to the ICANN, the contract that they have with ICANN, because that would put them in a difficult position to not respect national law. And after some discussion in the group, they have approved one additional trigger, which is the possibility that a national authority responsible for privacy and data protection provides a statement to the registrar saying that the registrar is not in compliance with national law. Other than that, the previous policy only said that the registrar could act if there was a case being proposed against it, either in court or if it was under investigation by law enforcement. So it lowers the threshold that registrars have in front of them to say that they cannot comply with particular provisions of the WHOIS policy because that would put them in conflict with national law. So this is the report that we have in front of us. It creates this additional trigger. I think that the main problem that we have, and I think that Stephanie put this very well in her dissenting opinion in the report, is that maybe this is not enough of a change. Maybe this trigger is not so adequate. First of all, because national authorities, they usually do not provide opinions like this. When you have like a data protection authority in the country, it will only act if it's provoked by a third party saying that, you know, there is a problem with regards to the law. So it needs to be provoked. It will not provide an opinion. So that may not work as a trigger in all jurisdictions, maybe work in some of them, but not in all. And one additional problem, and this is particularly with the process that has been envisioned by ICANN when the trigger is done, is that GAC member, who is the country in which this national law is being questioned, it needs to be brought into the process, and ICANN needs to hear the opinion of the national GAC representative. And another point that was raised as in Stephanie's dissenting opinion was that the GAC representative usually is not responsible for privacy and data protection policy nationally. And usually even data protection authorities, they have an oversight power over the executive branch of the government. So that sort of creates an imbalance, if you may, on the national level, because, you know, you will hear the government or the executive branch that maybe even himself having problems with not respecting privacy laws nationally. So that does not respect this national balance and the power that data protection authorities usually have, even over the government, to oversee them. So there are these problems. I don't know how we should position ourselves in the face of this. I would like to hear others, because the role of the GNSO Council is not to rediscuss or reopen issues that have been discussed in the working groups or in the task forces or whatever. It's to vote for the report if the report followed the due process, if it was in agreement with what was enshrined in the charter that created the working group, and so forth. So we cannot reopen substantive issues in the GNSO Council meeting. However, I feel that the points that were raised as either Stephanie's dissenting opinion, they are strong points. It seems to me that this attempt to correct the policy is insufficient because the policy itself that was approved by the GNSO before has problems. So it's sort of an attempt of a quick fix that will not address the problem really and will be confronted again probably with the same issue in 1 year or two. So I am tempted to vote against it as a message that we are not in full agreement with regards to this report. However, I would like to hear others, maybe Amr as well, if he's online, because he always makes the point very strongly that we should not reopen discussions, but maybe we have a ground for that. Thanks.
Thank you, Marilia. I might add just a minor tidbit of some interest, perhaps, that I was yesterday in the meeting of Finnish Data Protection Board, and the issue came briefly up during a discussion. Maybe collision course when the new data protection regulation comes into force. But I see that David has his hand up, so Dave, please go ahead.
Hello. Can people hear me?
You can hear you loud and clear. Go ahead.
Loud and clear. Go ahead.
I'm generally in agreement with everything Marilia has said, this is a, and with in Stephanie's dissent, this is a basically fairly terrible and somewhat ridiculous policy. The registrars have complained about it many, many times because it essentially says that they need to, you know, need to be in active violation. They can't sort of arrange their business in order to comply with European data protection law. They can only arrange it to non-comply, wait till they are told it's wrong, and then apply the change, which is sort of ridiculous. ICANN have been extremely terrible on this in particular, insisting that it must be directly from a national authority and that the advice of the Article 29 working group, which coordinates all the national authorities, is not sufficient, and other sort of ridiculous things. But apart from it being a, it is a terrible policy, but it is the policy we have. There were reasons why this report was constrained from fixing the problem more generally, because it's essentially an implementation report, not a new bit of policy work. I don't think there's any way we can sort of object to the report. I think we'll have to support it, because the previous status quo was worse, but it's clearly there's a lot of widespread dissatisfaction with this situation from us, from the registrars, probably the contracted parties generally. I think, though obviously the IPC argued for this position, I think we're going to vote for it, but I think we will. There will probably be some debate, there will or discussion as there was previously in Helsinki, and I think we should strongly, you know, express our opinions and about that it's not so good in support of the registrars. If the registrars approach us to express some form of dissent, I think we should agree with them, though I don't think they have yet. That's all really. Thanks.
Thank you, Dave. I see that Stephanie Perrin has joined us. Okay, I guess you noticed that we are talking about the WHOIS report that's coming up tomorrow. Would you like to add your own voice, because you have been the most active, I think, in trying to point out the, how ridiculous this thing actually is. Should fight back. Stephanie, care to comment? No? You're still having connection troubles, maybe.
Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, yes. Please go ahead.
Okay, very good. Sorry. I have pondered this, and I was actually thinking that perhaps we should be raising a motion to revisit the WHOIS policy, because as you probably know, if you've read any of the transcripts on this, I wound up doing a dissenting opinion, as did Chris Wilkinson, and they're listed as appendices. This was only a, and apologies if I'm repeating what Dave said, this was only a review of the trigger and the procedure, it's the conflict with law procedure, which wasn't working. However, the whole policy is crazy, if you ask me. And it was drafted many years ago, and it hasn't been revisited. Many years ago being, I believe, 2006. And we have different procedures now for drafting policies in general. You might say, well, why don't we just leave it and roll it into the RDS group that we're working on? And that might be logical, but I don't think we'll actually get to this conflict with law policy for probably another 2 or 3 years. So raising the issue of a motion at council to revisit this policy in general might be possible. So I don't know. I think we should have a discussion about it in any case, there's no real point in slowing down this report because procedurally, even though it was ludicrous, we were put in place to review the procedure. We reviewed the procedure. If we want to look at the policy, that's a whole other process. So I don't know how people feel about that. Those of us who are on the RDS group are probably thinking, oh, God, this is life is difficult enough with just the RDS thing. On the other hand, this is a really crazy way for the registrars to manage their business. And I think we would get support from the data protection commissioners on this to revisit this. So that's pretty well the only thought that I had. Yes, we pretty well have to vote it through. I don't see any point in stopping it, although I'm open to discussion on that. The real question is, should we revisit the policy?
Okay, thank you, Stephanie. I see that Marilia has her hand up. Marilia, please go ahead.
Thank you, Stephanie. It's very important to hear your opinion because you were in the group. And I don't know if you were here when I was asking, but that was exactly my concern, that the Genital Council does not reopen substantive discussions that were held elsewhere. But at the same time, look at the policy. What this report says is that the fact that the privacy of individuals may be being disrespected on the ground does not matter. You know, even if the registrar finds an opposition between national privacy laws and the contract, he cannot trigger any process. So what really matters is when a law authority comes to the registrar and threatens with litigation. In the end of the day, it's all about preserving the system, preserving ICANN's contractual compliance, not about respecting the law or having the individual as the center of the thing, of the policy. It's not about privacy. It's about contractual compliance and making sure that compliance extends and is respected as much as possible. So I think that the focus is misguided. I agree with you that this falls on the substantive side, maybe, and that we cannot reopen discussions. I don't think that there is any way that we can block the approval of this report. However, when you look at the transcripts from the future and when history sees what happened and how the different councillors voted, I think that maybe it's important to have dissenting voices just to show that this was not a consensus, that there were people that really opposed to the point saying, I don't want this to move forward. So I think that it's important for the record, not that we can change the outcome. But each council should vote according to their mind. But personally, I was thinking about, you know, voting against it only for the fact of recording that this is not consensus. There are dissenting views on that, and this report is bad, and we should come to discussion of the policy. I completely agree with you. We won't stop here. But at least it creates, you know, a mark that we are not in full agreement with it, like you have put in the document, and that was so important to include your dissenting opinion. Thanks.
Thank you, Marilia. Armour, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Tapani, and thanks, Stephanie, for making it to today's call. I have a couple of questions, and then I have a comment that I'm not sure whether it's relevant or not. But my first question is just that I really want to be sure what it is we're voting to adopt. If we do vote in favor of this motion, if I'm not mistaken, that means that there will be an alternative trigger to the previous one, which meant that the original trigger to sort of kickstart this policy was that a contracted party, such as a registrar, would have to receive some sort of notice, or basically a government agency would have to find it breaking the law and let them know that they're breaking their local laws, and then they could sort of launch this process, and with the report from the IAG is suggesting that an alternative trigger be included as well, which is, I believe, a letter from a law firm or something to that effect. So if we do not vote in favor of this, does that mean that the alternative trigger will not be available to contracted parties? And is this something that we want to support or not? That's my first question, notwithstanding that the whole process sucks, and I agree on that for sure. But I just want to be sure that I understand what it is we're voting to adopt here. My second question is regarding the motion itself, and I note that it was submitted by James Blado, who is the council chair, and he's also a rep on the council for the registrar stakeholder group. And in submitting the motion, he also indicated that his submission of the motion does not necessarily mean that the registrars are supporting the motion or are going to vote in favor of adopting it. And I also noted in the group's final report that the issue of the alternate trigger did not or may not have received the majority, may not have received like majority support from the members of the group. And so I'm a bit confused. If this group did not achieve a level of consensus that allows it to put forward this sort of recommendation, and the submitter of the motion does not appear to be supporting the motion either, who exactly is going to support this? And since this is not exactly a consensus policy, I'm assuming it will require a simple majority on council to adopt. If we do vote against this, are we going to be the only ones to vote against it, or will there also be other groups in the council? I was just hoping Stephanie could give us some sort of sense of what folks on the group, including registries and registrars, feel about this. My last comment on this and regarding privacy in general, a few days ago, last week, I think, I sent an email to the policy committee list. It was an email that we received on the implementation review team of ThickWhois, and there was a recommendation coming out of that PDP for a legal study to be conducted by ICANN legal staff on how much ThickWhois may conflict with privacy and data protection laws. There were problems that came up, but another part of the recommendation was that if changes occur in sort of the setting for privacy and data protection, particularly in the EU, which is being used as a benchmark, that this should be brought up, the IRT and the GNSO Council should be informed. And so I believe the implementation review team is preparing something to that effect, particularly, I think, concerning the fact that Safe Harbor is on its way out, and this may create a reason why the GNSO Council or the GNSO in general may need to take a closer look at privacy and data protection laws and how they conflict with WHOIS policies. And so I'm just mentioning this now just to support Stephanie's earlier suggestion on us possibly submitting a motion requiring some sort of legal review of WHOIS policies, where they stand and where they're headed. My first two questions would be really grateful if Stephanie could shed some light on those. Thanks.
Thank you, Amr. Stephanie, would you want to reply to Amr?
Thanks very much. I was actually a bit surprised in this implementation committee because basically the registrars, while saying this is completely nuts and this isn't good either, they kind of caved towards the end. I think everybody got tired of fighting. This was Jamie Headland chairing this thing and basically reminding us that all we could do was discuss whether a letter was a better idea. And so they kind of reached a consensus that this would be better than what we have now, even though it wouldn't likely work. So I was scratching my head thinking we should go to the wall on this, but the consensus seemed to evaporate. So I really don't know. I did pop some queries in this regard on the Skype channel that we have with the registrars and didn't get any response. So it might be worthwhile just checking again, and I'll do that as soon as we get off the call. Before the meeting tomorrow, but my sense is that they don't really want to, they just want to slide this through and get on with it. And they may have a plan. There are rumors that they have a plan for the RDS. I wish that would that would be true, because we seem to be spinning in circles on the RDS group. But I certainly agree with Marilia and Amr that it's a good idea to check with them again and see what they're up to. I would be worried about voting it down just in case we pick up some stray votes and it goes down and they weren't on side. Although I agree that if James is saying I'm putting it forward but I'm not necessarily supporting it, that's an odd thing for him to do. Plenty of people could have put it forward, like, say, for instance, the IP guys. They're the ones who want it.
Thanks, Stephanie.
Okay, thank you, Stephanie. Anybody else want to talk on this? Okay, I would like to add as a possible thing that might have an impact on this agenda for the future that I indeed was in the Finnish Data Protection Board meeting yesterday, and that is a government body that can take positions in principle without having a concrete court case at hand yet. But it's not exactly easy to get it to do that, because this issue was briefly mentioned, not discussed in substance, but how we might be able to bring it there to get them to make a pronouncement of the issue. But that's, don't say if that's going to happen, anything. So, okay, Avery, you have one to speak. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Avery speaking. So I want to try and make sure, I'm being a little slow this morning. So the issue that some of us have is that while it needs to be fixed, and it needs to be fixed much more completely than the addition of this trigger does, that this trigger at least provides something, but it's not adequate. So the decision the council members are making, and this is a question, should we vote for something that's not good enough, or should we insist on something better? Is that pretty much the issue, or am I not understanding? I certainly personally think that adding another trigger is a good thing, as long as we don't assume that that has solved the problem. And I think that people that talked about there needing to be a deeper, in 2006, getting this far, you know, what was an achievement. And in those days, as I said in the chat, the council had absolutely nothing to say about implementation. So, it's never really been tested. At that point, it seemed like a good thing. At this point, it seems like it's limited and it does need to be extended. But it seems to me that adding this trigger is a good thing, even if it's not a sufficient thing. So I'm trying to understand. Thanks.
Thank you, Avery. Does anybody else want to comment on this? Amr, you have the floor.
Thanks, Tapani, and thank you again, Stephanie and Avery. I just follow up my question in the chat. I wasn't sure, but my understanding was that the scope of this group, the Implementation Advisory Group, was just to review the triggering mechanisms and not the entire policy. And Stephanie confirmed that in the chat. I was just wondering if anybody has any background on why that is. And it's my understanding that GNSO consensus policies are meant to be reviewed periodically. And this is sort of like a standard thing in the GNSO. We're supposed to review GNSO recommendations over time, and I was just wondering why there was so much emphasis on making sure that whatever comes out of the implementation advisory group had to match the original policy and could not change it, and was just really looking at creating this alternative trigger. I do appreciate this wasn't a PDP working group, but was there at least any discussion on a complete overhaul of this policy and a sort of 360-degree sort of like review of it from start to finish, or is this something that is not coming down the line? I'm just wondering if this conversation took place at all. Thank you.
Thank you, Amr. I see Stephanie, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Stephanie Perrin, for the record, absolutely. You may be sure that Chris Wilkinson and I battered them to death on that, and we were constantly reminded by Jamie Hedlund that the scope of our group, which had been set up, was only to review the triggers, the mechanism, and it was to solve a total impasse where some of the registrars, notably one, Michaela Nalen, had basically said, this is impossible. I have to break the law and expose my company to fines before ICANN will allow me to proceed. And basically, this was blocking his ability to sell the new GTLDs because he wasn't in compliance with ICANN's contractual requirements in the 2013 RAA, which stipulate that they have to adhere to this policy, and he could not get the DPA to give him a ruling, and therefore he was in no man's land, basically. So they only raised this working group to solve issues that had been raised at a very high level, and bear in mind that there are two conflicts with law. One is with the requirement to put information into the who is. The other is a requirement, which they also have to seek a waiver for, on data retention, and they're two separate things. So in answer to Marilia's question, the new trigger requires ICANN to seek advice from the national GAC member where the law is put into question. What's the weight of the member's opinion? That all depends on the authority with which the members speak. And as I've said before, Carlos isn't on the line, so he can't bonk me over the head on this. I am convinced that quite a few of those GAC members are not doing proper consultation at home. I've raised this a number of times. I've raised it on the EWG, and the U.S. Member said it's not my problem if countries don't coordinate at home. Because basically, it's unlikely that a telecommunications person at the level that they usually send to the GAC has any authority to speak on behalf of an independent data protection authority. So, you know, this was equally stupid as a workaround. However, that's what's going on here. Again, it's very like the letter that the ICANN sent to Jakob Kunstam when he was complaining about the 2013 RAA, and Jakob at that point was the head of the Article 29 group, which represents Europe, European data commissioners. And so they basically said, we don't think you speak for governments. We think the GAC does. So basically go away, don't bother us, which I've never seen such a letter to independent data protection authorities. It's just astounding. Anyway, I cannot tell you, you're bringing back flashbacks of how frustrated I was on this working group, but in answer to Amr's question, yeah, this group was only constituted to break that logjam, which I presume McKaylee had managed to trigger something at the board level, and they set this up. Quite frankly, it was already going when I joined, and I haven't checked on exactly what board direction authorized it, but that was what got this thing going. I won't use the word trigger. And there was an absolute refusal to even contemplate the fact that the policy hadn't been reviewed since 2006 and desperately needed to be reviewed, that is. I do agree with Avery. I mean, I think that way back in 2006, this was a victory. It was all anybody could get. The problem is every other policy seems to get reviewed more often, with a notable exception of the rights protection mechanisms. But we would be putting the data the registrars back on the hot plate if we didn't pass this workaround. So it's extremely frustrating, but I'll be surprised if they don't say, yes, please vote for it when we check.
Okay, thank you, Stephanie. I see your mic is still on, your hand is still up, but it sounds like you stopped speaking. Anybody else want to comment on this? I think we have pretty much have a consensus that the policy basically sucks, but this report still will pass anyway. So, if nobody else wants to comment on this, let's move on. The agenda will actually backwards to item 4, which was where we decided to wait for AMRU to join. So we have a council vote on the approval of recommendations from the Standing Committee on GNSO Improvements. And AMRU is the presentation bearer of that in the session meeting tomorrow, so you can present it to us as well, I hope. AMRU, you have the floor.
Thanks, Sapani. This is AMRU. These are recommendations concerning two projects coming out of the Standing Committee on Improvements. These will likely, if the motion is adopted, will be the last recommendations coming out of this committee, as part of the motion also indicates that it will be disbanded and replaced by the GNSO Review Working Group, which is still in formation. It's still being formed. These two projects, one of them was triggered as a result of the last GNSO Council chair elections in Dublin last year, and it's just seeking to amend the GNSO operating procedures by sort of spelling out the procedures for electing a chair and listing different scenarios in which the chair is not conclusively elected, and a sort of a stepwise approach of how to approach this and deal with it in an efficient manner so that GNSO Council business is not delayed and so that a hopefully swifty resolution to a failed election can be achieved. It's rather straightforward. I could go through the steps themselves if you like. But I do believe I sent those to the NCUC and CESG lists when they were open for public comment. But basically the recommendations are for vice chairs to sort of serve as interim chairs in the event that that a chair is not conclusively elected, and for a timeline to be established by which a chair does need to be elected. And it also takes into consideration instances where vice chairs are are term limited and will not continue being vice chairs, sort of a stepwise approach that may end up in the GNSO Council, the NOMCOM appointee to the council who is a non-voting member. So this is the houseless NOMCOM appointee I'm referring to. So this is sort of the last case scenario where this NOMCOM appointee would be appointed as interim chair simply for the purpose of overseeing the elections and then possibly taking care of some council business that needs to be addressed during that period. It's a pretty solid proposal as far as I'm concerned. I don't know if there are any specific questions to it or if folks would actually like me to go over each scenario in detail or not. And if you do, let me know. I personally think it's a very thoroughly thought out process, and hopefully it will give the GNSO Council direction on how to proceed if we do face what we did face in Dublin, and it just makes things easier and more predictable, in my opinion. And I would recommend adopting this motion. The other part of the motion that I mentioned, the other project the SCI was working on and is submitting these two projects together, is sort of like formalizing how motions are submitted to the GNSO Council, and no significant changes were really made to the current practice, except for that it was sort of pointed out that if there is not a seconder to a motion by the time the motion is meant to be discussed during a council meeting, then the motion would not be discussed at all. So there's now a condition that there has to be a seconder for the motion, or else the motion will not be discussed during the council meeting. I was hoping when the SCI was working on this, and I do represent the NCUC on the SCI, not the NCSG, but I was hoping to include a deadline to making amendments to motions, friendly or otherwise. I was trying to go for something like a 48-hour deadline prior to the council meeting, and my intent in this was so that, for example, the NCSG would have an opportunity to discuss any amendments that were put forward during policy calls like this one, which typically take place 48 hours or 2 days prior to the council meeting. But this idea was resisted, and I think the sense both on council and on the committee was that they would like the process or the procedures for submitting motions to be as flexible and easy as possible, and not set constraints like a 48-hour deadline to amendments. So we basically have the same procedures for submitting motions. They've just been codified in the, or they will be codified in the operating procedures if this motion is adopted. And the second part of this motion is a follow-up to a motion from last month's council meeting. When the GNSO Review Working Group Charter was adopted, the motion included that once the SCI completed its final two projects, which are the topic of this month's motion, that it would be disbanded and that its mandate would be picked up by the GNSO Review Working Group, which is sort of an added duty to that group, apart from implementing the recommendations of Westlake, the independent examiner, the recommendations that were adopted by the ICANN board, that is. So effectively, if this motion is adopted, the SCI should be disbanded, and that was included in the resolve clauses of this motion. I'm happy to take any questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Amr. Sounds like for once we have a reasonably well-done recommendation to go on. Any questions about this? Okay, seems Amr presented it so comprehensively that everybody is on the clear about this thing. Okay. So, if there are no questions or comments on this, let's move on. Item 6 on the council agenda tomorrow is discussion on ICANN board letter on new GTLD subsequent procedures. Would any of our councillors like to take this on? No? Is this something that you don't think concerns us at all? Okay, Avery, please go ahead.
Okay, not a councillor. And therefore pause to give any of the council members a chance to comment before I did, but I am the co-chair of the PDP working group that is working on the new GTLDs. And just to inform, what we've done is we went to Paul McCready, who is the liaison for this group in the GSO Council, and basically made the request that if the Council is going to do any sort of substantive answer other than to tell the Board we have a PDP and this is their schedule, et cetera, we would ask that they, you know, come to us with the question. Just to let people know, within the working group itself, I'd say there's a split. There's a large group of people, and NCSG has some people in the group, but not many. And of course, as chair in the group, I'm in very much a neutral role, but as co-chair of the group with Jeff Newman. The split is basically that we have a large body of people who says, no, we do have to work through all of these issues before we rush on to another new GTLD round, subgroup procedure, but it will be most probably a round, and that we need to finish all the reviews, and that we need to finish both the review and the recommendations that we plan to give the council. There are other people that are saying, no, we got to get on with it. There's some of the things, like, for example, for brands, there's absolutely no reason for us to not get going. Other people have said, hey, if somebody's willing to do it under the old rules, why not? Let them have, let them apply for names now. You know, why should they have to wait while you muck around with the rules when they're happy with them? And then there's probably a small number of people that sort of say, we should wait until all the reviews are done and that. But there are some areas like developing economies and such where, we didn't do such a good job, so maybe we could do something for them in the meantime before we finish it all. So what we're saying is come back to the group. Now, the last issue I wanted to mention is that some people are asking, well, can't you segment so that there'd be interim deliverables and on some of these so that we don't have to wait for absolutely everything before moving forward? But that our initial response on that, that's possible. We'd have to look at all of our schedules, but also that's something that would need to come back from the council to us as sort of a charter change, because at the moment we have a charter with a single final deliverable that covers all the issues. And so, in a sense, we ask that they consult the group before they do anything, but we acknowledge that if there's going to be anything like interim pieces delivered, then we need to change the PDP charter. And at that point, that sort of new ground, we have split issues up into multiple PDPs, but I don't remember an instance, and I could be very wrong because I don't pay close enough attention to everything on the right side and everything else where we've done deliveries. But anyhow, we don't quite know how we would do it. So that's pretty much where, from the perspective of a co-chair of the PDP working group, I see it. Thanks.
Thank you, Avery. I see Stephanie, you have your hand up. Please go ahead. I can't hear you, Stephanie.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, now we can hear you. Please go ahead.
Okay, great. Sorry. I thought we'd had a discussion on this and agreed that, and maybe it was just a bunch of us, I don't know, possibly at the last meeting, that this one, there were so many things that needed to be examined in the context of the next round, policies that weren't working, that we should go slow and not try and segment and go forward, because it was such a, so many issues. I won't say it's a mess, but personally, I'm deeply concerned about content regulation creeping into these new GTLDs, and being left in the hands of the registry, the successful winners. And so I'm not sure that we have adequate policy to rule on that, but it strikes me that that's a very dangerous issue from the perspective of civil society. So my own gut feeling would be, how on earth could you segment this and take pieces that are safe and go ahead with them. It doesn't seem to me that there's much that is safe if the policy is not stable on how these things have been done. But I don't know enough about this, so I'd love some answers from those of you who are up to speed on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. I see that Marilia, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Tapani. Actually, two questions for Avery. First of them, do you feel in this board's letter, do you feel pressure to move forward more swiftly? Do the co-chairs feel that there's political pressure coming from the board to do that? You know, that some actors are interested, is there top-down pressure? And the other question is related to the communication with the consumer trust and consumer choice review. So far, has the consumer trust, consumer choice provided elements in order to show that maybe the first round was not as successful as we think, and to give them good reasons to wait a little bit more for the outcome of this discussion, not only on behalf of developing regions that were clearly not advantaged in the first phase, but we know that, you know, this is not a good argument for everyone. But has the CCT provided evidence that would reinforce this point that we should wait? Thanks.
Thank you, Marilia. Good questions. Avery, you have some answers?
Yeah. On the first question, yes, we're definitely feeling pressure. And it's not just from the letter, it's from various, you know, people in the group have brought it up. Some have said, oh, the chair said we should move more quickly. We should do some interim deliverables. So let's do it. And both of us, both of the co-chairs have agreed that no, that is not something we should be doing. Between the co-chairs, while it's very, very amicable, I'd say there was a difference of opinion on how quickly we need to move through things, one of us seeing it faster than the other. You know, so we're feeling pressure, but we're not changing what we're doing. What we have done is asked each of the four sub-teams that we've got that are just starting to work on the specific issues now that the overarching issues community comment period has ended. So they're starting to work on those. You know, we've asked them to look at all of their issues to make sure that they understand the priorities, the dependencies, and the actual schedules for those, so that if we have to do stuff, we understand what we're talking about. We're even not at point of having that next level down in the schedule, so it's difficult for us to talk about. On the CCT, I assume we have people here that are members of that. We are closely linked in liaison with them, both by having a liaison that's in both groups. In fact, there are several people that are in both groups. I have not seen an indication yet. I assume that the CCT is, you know, not putting out interim decisions or recommendations at this point. I think a lot of acceptance that things shouldn't move before the CCT review comes out. But at that point, which is probably before the PDP would be complete, especially since we're dependent on their review in part. So that, it's at that point that people says, well, maybe we don't need to wait for the PDP. It's enough to wait for the CCT review. This is something I caution against from a personal perspective, because that, again, puts a rush on the policy development process. So, but that is one of the nuances in the thing. Of course, we have to wait for the reviews, but do we have to wait for a new PDP? Because one thing to consider is, without the PDP, the old policy stands. And as there is the policy from 2007, it was approved, it was horribly implemented. Well, that's an opinion, that is not the working group's position. And, you know, but let's just go, you know, it is the standing policy. And if the GNSO doesn't change the policy, it's a go. So that's an extra element that comes in with it. If we just wait for the CCT, their report is middling to fair, then there will be push to say, let's just stick with the policy we got, folks. The policy we have says it needs to be reviewed. It was reviewed. Now let's move on. Thanks.
Thank you, Avery. Any other comments? Anybody else wish to speak on this? Seems not. Okay. Let's move on. Next item, the council session tomorrow, is next steps for the cross-community working group on internet governance. I see Stephanie, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Actually, just one item left on that letter issue on the subsequent.
Okay, we can return to it.
I noticed that the group that was struck by Fani and company to examine public interest seems to have fizzled. I was supposed to be on the mailing list, and I haven't received anything. Public interest is a rather key item in the new GTLDs. It's referred to specifically in the January letter in the list of issues. And I'm just wondering if anybody has any news. I realize that's a bit of a non sequitur, but I think it's relevant to that group. What's happening on that?
Thank you, Stephanie. You asked if anybody has any news. Does anybody? Okay, Marilia, you have your hand up. Go. Marilia? You have the floor if you... Seems that Marilia has lost connection, or maybe that's an old hand. Okay, Amr, you have your hand up too, so go, you speak. Well, Amr, you have the floor.
Thanks, Tapani. Thank you, this is Amr. I have a couple of comments, but they may not turn out to be terribly useful. My impression of the group that Stephanie was referring to that's supposed to be working on public interest issues, my impression is that it was originally set up and some folks from the business constituency and from at large, I think, were really pushing for this. My impression is that it was really just a group to try to increase the influence of the public interest on sort of a content regulation and using GTLD policies to regulate content. So if that group is dying a slow and painful death, I'm not terribly disturbed by that. So I think that would be a good thing. I also wanted to note that although I am a member of the new GTLD subsequent procedures, PDP, I have not been active on that group at all, but I do recall early on in the first few calls that the issue of public interest was raised, and that is something within the scope of this PDP, and particularly concerning the public interest commitment specifications, for example. And I think there was also a few other mentions of public interest in the previous applicant guidebook. So I think there's like the limited public interest objection. So public interest does pop up in a few places, and it is within the scope of this PDP. And I do recall a conversation that happened, although it was premature at the time, but I assume this PDP will deal with this at some point. But one of the suggestions was to sort of just change the title of all these things to something besides public interest, something that may be more focused or more precise in what the specification, for example, in the registry agreement is meant to do. So call it something other than a public interest commitment. And in the applicant guidebook, for example, the limited public interest objection could be renamed or maybe not. But in I guess in that sense, it was a lot more specific in what counted as a public interest, a limited public interest objection. I'm personally a bit optimistic on progress that may be made on that front, but it will require diligence and it will require input, I think, from the NCSG particularly. I think there are quite a few of us, if not all of us, I think we do have we don't have consensus within the NCSG on how to deal with public interest issues, but there are quite a few of us, I believe, who have a problem with how they're framed and how they are used. So generally, I think this is still work to be done, and it was one of the reasons why I was a bit hesitant about another round proceeding before the PDP was completed, particularly since the public interest commitments in the registry agreement, if I'm not mistaken, were not developed and recommended using a GNSO PDP, but it was more the GAC and the ICANN board who sort of stuck this into the registry agreement. Someone please correct me if I'm mistaken, but I do have a problem with that, but it is, I guess, the existing agreement that ICANN uses with its new GTLD registries, and I'm guessing it will be included if another round proceeds without the PDP going through, but I'm not sure if there's anything we can really do about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Marilia. You want to speak? Marilia? Marilia, go ahead.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go.
Sorry, I disconnected and my connection failed here, the audio. Just a quick comment on that. I think that the fact that the concept has been misappropriated in ICANN discussion does not make the concept necessarily bad. I mean, it's an idea that is present in the new GTLD subsequent procedures, and we will have to deal with that at some point. I don't think that dropping it altogether will solve the problems that we have in the face of having this expression in so many different ICANN documents right now. And I think that the tendency looking outside ICANN is not that notions of public interest or public good or internet and public service are going to fizzle in the future. Actually, the references to public interest or alternative versions of this formulation has increased in different spaces. It has been mentioned in WISIS last year. It is a topic that will be discussed in the next UN GGE when it comes to peace and security, you know, keeping the core of the internet neutral and so on. And these different spaces, they tend to have a feedback effect on one another. So it is possible that because this notion is being strengthened elsewhere, there is going to have a feedback effect, and maybe this is going to be a hard one to die in ICANN too. So I think that maybe it would be more useful to try to dispute what the topic means, what the concept means, than to try to bury it all together, because that does not seem to be the tendency even elsewhere. Thanks.
Thank you, Marilia. I see that Dave, you have your hand up. You have the floor.
My understanding is this public interest process, I have no idea whether it's continuing. It was certainly a FADI initiative, and it was being led by Nora, who has since left ICANN, and who knows whether it will restart at some point. This would be quite a good question to ask in our next board session, actually, the future of how the board sees this process going forward. Personally, I don't agree that it's good for it to disappear, because in its absence, in the absence of any real investigation or process to look at what public interest means, I suspect we'll be lost. We've lost any chance to sort of challenge the current public interest commitment process and so on, though, as Amra does point out, a number of other sort of options, and we certainly should think about them. I certainly think the current public interest commitment process is probably the worst sort of, one of the worst of, policy things that happened in the last round of new GTLDs. It was not PDP, it was all sort of whipped up with the GAC. It's sort of in practice has become this sort of way for people to, a lot of large registries who don't care much about things, to sort of curry favour with the GAC by putting in policies that have actually been not made it through PDP, but they know some GAC members like, and other sort of nonsense. It's an absolute disaster. But it's true that we don't necessarily need that previous public interest process to continue in order to challenge that. Nonetheless, it might still be useful if public interest continues to be a sort of deliberately undefined term within the ICANN space. It will continually be abused, I think, by various number, you know, various groups that see advantage for that, particularly including the GAC or some people within the GAC. It's also true that I know we don't have consensus with NCSG on this, or even with any within. I don't know about NPOC, but there's not consensus within NCUC either. I don't suspect that will ever really be resolved, but and trying to even sort of put together the various sort of public interest stances within NCUC have proved to be, or within NCSG have proved in the past, have proved to be relatively complicated. But I do think it's worth keeping an eye on where this process is going, and whether particularly it should be something we think about within the new GTLD subsequent procedures. As I said, I think it's probably the worst bit of, one of the worst bits of policy in the last round. Thanks.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
Sancio, my mic is still on when I see Nico, but any other comments on this issue? Quite a lot of interest in it, but I think we have covered most of the stuff. Enough for this call, it seems, at least nobody has your hand up, so let's move on. And the next item was the next steps for the cross-community working group on internet governance. I see, Ed, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Dupani, my error. I thought we were going on to item 8. I'll take my hand down.
Okay, we're still on item 7, but it seems nobody has interest in this working group. Okay, Marilia, you have the floor.
Thank you, Tapani. Actually, it's just a quick update that this month the PC has conducted a selection processes to define BuildRig substitution to be part of the CWGID. We had names of Fazane and Arsene that have been kindly put forward by both of them. After conducting a selection process with the members of the policy committee, Fazane was selected name. We have conveyed this message to the chair and the co-chair of the CWGIG, so I assume that from the next meeting onwards, she will be our representative in this working group. Not that it makes much difference in terms of the dynamics of the discussion, just to remind everyone that the group has a fixed membership. However, basically, the discussions are very horizontal, and everyone who is an observer to the group can actively participate. The only difference to be a member or not, if some issue comes to a vote, then only the members can vote. But knowing the dynamics of the CWGIG, in which it's more based on exchanging information and discussing issues, I think that we would very rarely come to a vote on anything. However, just to keep everyone informed on that, Rafik has raised his hand. Just before moving on, my only note of not concern, but I'm finding very curious how the CWGIG has remained on the agenda of the Genesis for so long. I mean, it's not only the cross-community working group that we have, but it seems that some people, particularly I find it from James, they have been very concerning trying to understand the value of it and if the GENESO should remain as one of the organizations supporting it. So there is a constant review of the performance. More information have been requested. There have been moments in which Rafik and Olivier have come to the GENESO council meetings to inform of the work of the CWGIG. So although I think that more information is always better and it's good to have this accountability and know what is going on, being one of the chartering organizations, but I'm failing to understand this particular interest on the CWGIG. I don't know if Rafik shares my opinion, but I would like to hear from him as well what he thinks this comes from, or if there is something that we should be concerned, or if even he's finding it a good thing or not. Thanks.
Thank you, Marilia. I'm sure we all want to hear what Rafik has to say. So, Rafik, you have the floor.
Hi, can you hear me? Oh, yes, can you hear me or not?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Thanks. To be honest, I don't understand why the council is still discussing about the cross-community working group in internet governance. We were asked at Marrakesh to do reports and to give updates to the council, and we did so in Helsinki meeting too. And so it's not clear, and I concur with Marilia. It seems there are some people within the council, they have kind of interest, but which one, it's not clear. If they don't want that GENESO to be to keep as a chartering organization, they should say so. I mean, keeping this as an agenda item for many council call, it's quite concerning, and I'm not sure what they are asking us exactly. We discussed it in Marrakesh and Helsinki. We made it clear that we will be happy to report and to explain what we are doing. And also, I don't think the issue about using the principle of cross-community working group is right, because we kind of used some of them already in our charter before. And we had a way to kind of update the charter, or to put it more accurately, to interpret the charter regarding the participant and observer to make it more open. So speaking as co-chair of that working group, I, to be honest, I have no idea why we are still a topic of discussion. But I would ask our councillor maybe to push the GENESO chair to explain why he keep discussing about this. And if they want to take action, they should let us know. I think that at certain organizations, they should be fair to the people involved there and to be clear what's the issue, so we may explain. So, for example, we don't have real staff support. We just have, some time of an assistant of one of the ICANN executives. So we don't have that support and so on. And it's I don't see how we are taking that much time or making putting more workload for the GNSO. So it would be great if our counselor can get clarification from chair at least.
Thank you, Rafik. I see Avery, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. So first of all, I want to start by saying I very much support the continuation of this group, despite the things I'm about to say. I think part of the issue comes up still as the origin story of this group, where no one is really certain, and at least not within many of the council and many in the GNSO, of what the function of the group is. Is the group to advise ICANN on its actions with regard to internet governance? Is its actions to participate in internet governance activities? The whole discussion gets colored by the mission creep of ICANN and the FOTI hangover that comes in the origin story of this, that it's being, you know, yet another of the FOTI initiatives. I think there may be some support among people, I think I'd count myself among those, that perhaps the charter does need looking at and review. There is sort of a notion that says these ongoing groups ought to be reviewed periodically, whether it's annually or every couple years. But the charter of this group, being as old as it is, does not necessarily, I don't think, well, it's been a while since I read it, have that notion of we do certain work and we get reviewed on a yearly basis in terms of what our goals, milestones, deliverables, et cetera, are. And so there may be that kind of interest that this does need, and no one's got the time or bandwidth perhaps to do this now, so it's why it lingers on a list, that it does need a charter review just to make sure that, you know, it is what we want it to be. So I think that's one of the reasons why it keeps showing up, because those questions that a lot of people have not quite been answered. So, you know, I think as part of the asking why do we keep talking about this, there's also a indication that sort of says, and if we have some work to do on reviewing the charter, or reviewing the milestones, or, you know, whatever, then we should make that a specific work item and do it. Thanks.
Thank you, Avery. Rafik, your hand seems to be still up. It's an old hand.
Well, I want just to add something, maybe to respond to Avery.
Okay.
I mean, if there is any concern, and or if they want to maybe amend the charter or to add something, I think the GNSO Council can take that and liaise with the altering organization, including the ALAC and the ASAC. But we were kind of interrogated several times, and it's not clear what the expectation. And there was kind of question about the formative, this kind of standing working group. I mean, or there is expectation that we will finish at there is an end for the working group and so on. We can work on that, but at least we need more guidance from the GNSO here, GNSO Council, and they should also maybe work with the other shouting organization because we are not getting those kind of concern from the other groups. So I do think it's just maybe a small group, in particular maybe from the contracted party for some reason, And I don't think really it's about the procedure. It's just they are bringing up about the charter, the procedure, and so on. But it's for me, it's not clear. I never got clarity about what are the concerns. Because if we get them, we may try to respond as much as possible.
Okay, thank you, Rafiq. I see Amr, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Tapani, Ms. Amr, and thanks, Rafiq and Avri. They were helpful. I just wanted to point a couple of things out. Firstly, that the reason why we have one of the reasons why we have questions right now on why this is back on the council agenda is partly due to failure of myself and other NCSG councillors to report back to our stakeholder group following council meetings. We always prep for council meetings before they take place during these monthly policy calls, but we don't really follow up afterwards. And Merle has already taken steps as the policy committee chair to rectify that. But I did just want to point out that this discussion item was deferred from a previous council meeting, so it's not that it was discussed before and it's coming up again, although it has come up several times, and I recall Rafiq being the GNSO, the co-chair of this group appointed by the GNSO was asked to answer some questions in Marrakesh. He was asked to join a subsequent council call, which he did. And I agree with him, it's still kind of vague why questions keep coming up. From the description of this discussion item, it seems like the council just wants to go over some ways on how the GNSO council will oversee the work of the CCWG, as well as go over the reporting mechanisms back to the GNSO council, which I believe is a charter requirement. I believe the charter of the CCWG requires that they provide annual reports, detailed reports to each of the chartering organizations. And maybe they're just trying to figure out how to get this done. Maybe there's more to it, but I agree with Rafiq, and I think we should make inquiries on why this keeps coming up and why there seems to be a vague concern with this group. We'll try to get that done. Assuming that the discussion item is not deferred yet again. Thank you.
Thank you, Amr. Any other comments or questions on this issue? Okay, it seems not. So let's move to the item 8 on the council agenda, the proposed cost control mechanism and a request for GNSO Council validation of the budget for the cross-community working group on ensuring ICANN accountability. And Ed, now is your turn. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Tapani. And my apologies for being so enthusiastic about talking about the budget for jumping in earlier. We had a webinar last week that I attended along with Stephanie, and it was great to see her there as we were showing the NCSG flag, where we talked about some of the specifics of the CCWG budget. What I'd like to do here is talk a bit about what we learned at the webinar, but also fill in some blanks with information I have from basically my work in the CCWG and on the budget for council this year. The big picture, $37.1 million. That is the anticipated and past expenditures on the transition, the whole enchilada. Most of this is coming from the reserve fund, which right now is under one-third of desired levels. We can anticipate ICANN crying poverty going forward. We've already seen some of that. One thing to keep in mind, that's just the operational budget. There are other pots of money at ICANN. There is some ability to move money from one pot to the other. These are issues we should anticipate going forward as the concerns that ICANN is going to be expressing that we'll have to respond to. Back to the CCWG. An important thing to note is that within budgeted amounts, the CCWG itself controls where we spend it. So, for example, there is the possibility if legal fees budgeted the budget amount for legal fees is not enough, we can switch money from travel or the reverse. The tri-chairs of the CCWG will be meeting regularly with the Board Finance Committee to see how we're doing budget-wise, to recommend adjustments, to request more money, or to be told we're spending too much money. Let's talk about a few of the flashpoints that may be of concern to the NCSG. Travel. There are 20 traveler slots budgeted per meeting. Now, that's only for members of the CCWG, which in our case means only Robin. There is no defined guarantee of budget for the ATRT expert, which is Aubrey, although I understand she has been financed for the next meeting in India. There's no guarantee that will be going forward. None of the reporters are receiving any travel support. And we have lots of reporters. We have Fozzy, Niles, Aubrey, Michael, and myself. I may have forgotten one or two. We're serving as reporters in the sub-teams. We will not even get one-night hotel for the face-to-face meetings before the regular meetings, never mind travel support. Some concerns I have, and I believe others do as well. Staff support. In my view, to date on WS2, we're being bled. They have budgeted for the entire WS2 project the equivalent of $808,000 for total staff support. That compares to $1.7 million budgeted for staff support for transition implementation. To date, I'm concerned not only of the quantity, but also the quality of work the staff members are producing. My own little group, the CEP subgroup, we got our report last week, which was 3 weeks late, and the quality was so bad, it was a page in a paragraph that I've actually sent it back. I'm trying to get it redone with a little bit more substance. I've never had to do that before here in ICANN, so I question whether we are budgeted enough for staff support. I posed that question to Thomas Rickard. He said we are. I question it. The big issue that I believe will come up at the council meeting concerns the budgeted legal expenditures for the independent council. I know that Bill Corwin has been concerned about this. Stephanie may want to talk about it because she's raised this on the list as well. They budgeted us at $1.4 million total legal costs for Workstream 2. Now, what's interesting is that's budgeted not just for fiscal year 17, but also if it bleeds over as expected in the fiscal year 18. What I find very interesting about that is ICANN has no two-year budget. I have no idea how that's working into the line items. And I've sent an email to Xavier and still have not received the response. Now, let me tell you what that represents in terms of what we've spent in the past. It's about 13% of the total legal expenditures for Workstream 1. In Workstream 1 through March, ICANN spent $1.7 million for their counsel, Jones Day. Independent counsel that was hired by the CCWG, $2.8 million went to Sidley Austin and $2.4 million went to Adler Colvin. That's through March. My understanding has been an additional $1.25 million on all three firms since then. You have a grand total of about $5.2 million there. Somehow the total costs have been somehow there's $8.1 million that's been spent on legal fees. I'm not sure where they got that from because the itemized expenses don't add up. Again, that's another question that I sent to Xavier last week. There's $3.3 million total budgeted for transition legal costs in fiscal year 2017. As I said, for 17 and 18, the community is only being allowed to spend $1.4 million. Now, some good news, at least in my view, is how we're going to control costs. They have reestablished the legal executive. Now, that's a group of seven of us. That includes Robin, myself, Greg Chetan of the IPC, Dave McCauley from VeriSign, Athena Farragold from CCNSO, Sabine Meyer from CAC, and it's chaired by one of the tri-chairs from ALAC, Leon Sanchez. Now, we were the folks that hired the independent counsel. Initially, we were supposed to coordinate and manage them throughout the process, but somewhere along the line, without notification to us, we were pretty much disbanded. We're being brought back to manage the expenses. I think that's a good move. We worked really, really well together, and I think if we had stayed together, we would not have spent as much money as we did. Now, here are my concerns. We're being instructed that if ICANN Legal can answer the question in-house, we send the questions there. If not there, they want us to consider Jones and Day as a cost-efficient alternative before we reach out to the independent counsel. Now, there's a reason we have independent counsel, and that's largely because we don't trust Icon Legal and Jones Day. Knowing the people and the legal executive, I'm not sure what we're going to do. It would be highly surprised if we made extensive use of Icon Legal from past practice. Another concern I have is that the legal counsel is not being budgeted to actually attend or follow any of the meetings. Now, I understand that's quite expensive, so perhaps we could have them send a paralegal along or some cost-efficient manner to keep them informed as to what's going on, because I don't want to send them questions and they don't know the context in which the question has developed. That's not a good use of our resources, because it invariably will result in more questions. I'm also concerned that it's being set up so that Sidley Austin manages where the questions go. I've talked to a few members of the legal executives, and at our first meeting, which we haven't had one yet since our rebirth, we want to actually determine where the questions go as we did initially. And the reason for this is that Sidley has an interest in keeping the question for themselves. Although they've worked well with Adler, here's the plain fact in terms of cost control. The lead attorney from Sidley, and this is public record now, bills at $1,250 an hour. The name partner from Adler bills at $625 an hour. If we're going to try to reduce cost, in my view, we should use the lower cost law firm when at all possible, and I think we can do that better managing it ourselves. So I think during the call, what's going to come up is whether the $1.4 million is sufficient. And I guess one way to look at this is, since the money is there for fiscal year 17, one approach we might want to consider is state that is money just for fiscal year 17. If we go on to fiscal year 18, we would expect a new pot. But that's just one idea out there. I'd be interested in hearing how others feel about this. Thanks much.
All right. That was a comprehensive presentation of the budget issue, although it is a big issue. Anybody else want to follow up here? Stephanie, anything to add? Anybody else?
My only question to add is that you said that this was a potential way forward. Are there others on the table that we should be aware of? Are there other proposals?
Nothing. The chairs are telling me both publicly and privately they do believe we have sufficient financial support, and that they have received indications that if we go down the road and it's not there, that there is room to dip into the reserve fund again, although the Board Finance Committee really doesn't want to do it. So, you know, I got to trust the tri-chairs. These guys have been, they're not co-opted. If they think there's enough money there, I guess I have to trust them. At the same point, I am concerned. One of the concerns we've always had about WS2, particularly post-transition, is that there isn't the incentive for the board to support us to the extent we would like to have the support. I'm sensing that might be going on a little bit here. But again, if the tri-chairs are happy, I defer to them. But I do think, you know, I have mentioned this informally to who's Thomas, that what about legal costs? Could we do this? Could we say, man, that is, given the fact that ICON has no budgeting provision for a two-year budget, we have our five-year budget, five-year operating plan, we have our yearly budget. Could we just try to operate as if the $1.4 million for legal fees is just fiscal year 17? He didn't have any comment on that proposal, which gives me a sign that maybe that's something that would be acceptable. And again, I've sent questions to Xavier. When I get the responses, I'll put it on list. Thanks, Marilia.
Thank you, Ed and Marilia. Anybody else? Any comments on the cost control and budget?
And to me, it's just a concern, and coming back to the point that you mentioned before, that the rapporteurs are not going to be funded to attend the meetings. I think that that just hampers their capacity to develop their work properly, because they need to be on site. There are going to be meetings of the separate threads of work in every face-to-face meeting that we have from now on. So is there any way that we can revert that, or that ensure that some of these people who will not receive channels through other means, either because they're in council or in other structure, will receive funding and will have their attendance guaranteed?
Let's bring it up tomorrow. I would totally support that. The reporters are doing an enormous amount of work. I know Michael, who's never been to an ICANN meeting, Lord, my inbox is full of this great work he's doing up there in Canada. He's one of ours. And he's never been to an ICANN meeting. And I think that's ridiculous for him to be doing this amount of work, coordinating all of transparency along with Chris Wilson of Fox, not to be able to attend the meeting. Because we all need to get to know him. He needs to get to know us. And you really do need to be on site to actually do this stuff. So I think that's a great idea. And we should bring it up in the council meeting tomorrow. And obviously, as one of the chartering organizations, they should give some deference to how we feel on this matter. Thanks, Marilia.
Thank you again, Ed and Marilia. Anybody else want to comment on this? Okay, let's move on. Is somebody speaking? No. Okay, moving on. Item 9. Is planning and scheduling for ICANN 57, Hyderabad. I don't think we need to go in detail on the agenda or schedule at this point, but anything you think will come up tomorrow is what we should be talking about, or what we should bring up tomorrow. Anybody have any comments? Anything you want to? Okay, Ed, you have the floor.
Yeah, I think this will be a good time to continue to press on the visa issues that particularly FASI has been raising over time. We have a lot of Americans on council. They don't normally need to deal with visas. They're apoplectic right now at having to deal with the process. So I think if this issue does come up, we need to make the point this is something, of course, Amer is on council and he has to deal with this all the time, that we need to make the point that this is something some of the folks here in the community have to deal with every meeting. We had conversations about a year ago about asking ICANN to secure a visa, a firm that gets visas for people that have trouble and difficulty getting them. James Waddell in particular said that at GoDaddy, once they did this, a lot of the problems he had went away. Perhaps if the conversation turns in that direction, I suspect it will, we can bring that idea up again and also make the point that, hey, guys, you have to deal with this time. There are people that have to deal with this every meeting, and let's get a bit more proactive on this. Thanks.
Thank you, Ed. That's definitely a good point to make. So I hope some of you will bring that up tomorrow. Anything else? Okay, apparently not. Ed, your hand remains up on. Okay, that was an old hand. So you have nothing urgent now about the schedule. We'll wait for the discussion and note them of the visa problem. Okay, item tomorrow 10 in the council agenda is any other business. And there is discussion of note from Christy Spain on status of IGO acronyms protection work. First, anybody would like to talk about that? No? Okay, David, you have the floor.
Just really briefly, I actually thought the note from Chris to Spain on IGO acronyms was pretty good. Basically saying, yes, he realizes that this has gone on a ridiculous length of time, but a lot of that is because the board is unwilling to move forward in any way that disagrees with GNSO advice directly. I don't know that there'll be a council response, but I think the council is relatively united on the principle that we are really unwilling to see council IGO advice sort of discarded just because some in the GAC still don't like it very much. I don't think we have any big issue with this. It's moving forward very slowly. We'll see how it goes. That's all, really. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Dave. Anything, anybody else on this subject? No, I see that Amri is pointing out that I'm missing something in the agenda, two-letter GTLD registrations.
Hi, Tapani, this is Amri.
I don't see that. Okay, Amri, okay, you explained it.
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm sorry about jumping in the way I did. But this was just raised on the council list 2 days ago by Phil Corwin. There was an open public comment period that closed earlier this week where the board was proposing certain measures set up the protective mechanisms, I think, for that would appeal to governments and CCTLD operators on how two-letter domain name registrations under GTLDs should be done. And the NCSG submitted a comment during this public comment period, really criticizing a lot of the policies, what the proposed policy is. And Phil Corwin raised this on the council list, and he also referenced the NCSG comment as well as a blog post that Farzi wrote on the Internet Governance Project's website. So this will be a discussion topic, and the NCSG has pointed out, and Farzi, again, thanks to her. She was the principal author of the NCSG comment on this, which pointed out a bunch of substantive issues on this, and Phil, I believe, is also raising issues regarding the process of how this is getting done, and this is basically the ICANN board setting de facto GTLD policy without going through the proper processes. I see Farzi is actually in the Adobe Connect room. If she would like to talk about this, she can do a much better job than I can. I don't know if she would want to or not. But anyway, I just figured I'd bring this up now and just to give people a heads up that this will be discussed and we should be prepared for discussion. And I'm actually grateful that Phil brought this up. We probably should have done it ourselves. Thanks.
Thank you, Amrit. If I understand correctly, this is item 10.4 in the any other business list. There are two more items in the any other business that we haven't covered yet. Or did anybody want to comment on this two-letter GTLD thing? Okay. And 10.2 have confirmation of council liaisons to the translation and transliteration of GTLD contact data, PDP, IRTPC, PDP, IRTP, DPDP, and GNSO review working group. I guess this is not item of high interest in this confirmation of liaisons. If anybody wants to comment, now is the time. No? Okay, and 10.3 is timeline for GNSO chair, vice chair elections leading up to and at ICANN 57. Any comments on that one? Amr, you have the floor again.
Thanks, Tapani. This is Amr. Yeah, this goes back to the motion on the agenda item 4 that we discussed earlier in this call, and then the SCI recommendations on the chair and vice chair election procedures. If the motion is adopted tomorrow, then the new language that will be that will be included in the operating procedures also includes a detailed timeline and schedule. And the SCI was very cognizant of this, of sort of trying to get these recommendations into the GNSO Council so that they could adopt a motion to approve the recommendations and incorporate them in the operating procedures in time for that schedule to be implemented prior to this year's council chair election. So if the motion is adopted, that should really address the issues under this agenda item. I probably should have mentioned this earlier as well, and this is something I think is really great and something that we worked on the SCI, is that when we were talking about the election schedule for the council chair, one of the things we did was make sure that incoming councillors who are not yet on council will be eligible to run. And we took this into consideration in the recommendations themselves to make sure that, for example, NCSG, if we have incoming councillors who are not on council yet, that they will, that the NCSG will be very aware of the schedule ahead of time, including the nomination period. So to try to amend our own election timetable to make sure that if we have incoming councillors and if they are willing or eager to step in for chair elections, then they would be able to do so. Just thought I'd add that here. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? Anything else about the council agenda tomorrow? No? Okay. Let's look at the public comments we have pending at the moment. There are not many that seem important to us. There are two that are actually expiring today, closing today. Release of country and territory names with .softbank.art and .caravan. I don't think any of us have expressed any interest in those, but if you do, raise your hand. And another expiring today is proposed guidelines for the second string similarity review process. Also, I'm not aware of any interest in our group on that. And then there is that independent review of trademark clearinghouse services draft report, which has 3 days to go. Would anybody want to comment on that? I see Amra saying that we should look into it. Yeah, I think we should, but I know the time is really short. So this is just a draft report. But that's definitely something we should keep under our radar coming ahead. Technology has present, has read it and wants to comment, so we just note that. Look into it, and when it follows, okay, Marilia, we should do something about it today. That is perfect. But nobody wants to speak about it at this point, I see. So let's leave it at that for now. Remaining open comment periods, there's a GTLD Market Health Index beta, only call for comments. Okay, Marilia, that's a good clarification that you will reach out to Kathy. Yeah, but should have done that before this call, I guess, but can't do that. Okay, so, and there's another still remaining on the list. There's IANA naming function agreement. I don't think there is anything very controversial on that one. It's a week to go on that one if we have something to comment. And the proposed renewal of .tel registry agreement, also unlikely to be of much concern to us. Does anybody want to speak on any of these public comment periods? Anything more? It seems not. Okay. In our agenda, we still have any other business, and we have... Marilia, you want to say something about this? Almer, okay, you have your hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Tapani. Just some urgent appointments the NCSG Policy Committee needs to make, and we don't need to do this on this call for sure. We can do it on list
later.
Yes,
that's exactly what I was going to ask.
Yeah, okay, thanks. Just to point out, we have the Civil Society Coordination Group, and I believe we're overdue on that appointment. Robin pointed it out a few days ago. And there's also the GNSO Review Working Group. We have noticed it under the council agenda for under any AOB there, appointing a council liaison to that group. The NCSG also has to appoint a primary and alternate member to this group. This will be the first group that sort of is set up within the GNSO or chartered by the GNSO in a way similar to cross-community working groups. So it's got members who are appointed by the GNSO stakeholder groups and constituencies, and it's got participants and it's got observers. This is uncommon for a GNSO working group, but since the GNSO review working group is not just doing the review, it's also taking over the mandate of the SCI, then it might make a little sense to do that because there are certain rules on consensus levels to making changes in the GNSO operating procedures, and these are also indicated in the charter of this group. So we really need to make those appointments quickly. The GNSO review working group will probably begin, will probably hold its first meeting very soon. We have a few NCSG members who I believe four of us signed up as participants, but we still need to appoint our two members, the primary member and alternate member to this group, and we're really late on this. We should have done this by August 19th, so I would urge the policy committee members to move quickly on this. I've already pointed it out on that list multiple times. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Amr. We have a number of policy committee members here, if you care to comment, but certainly worth bringing up on the list again. And I think we have at least the policy committee chair and one of the vice chairs present, so you might want to take this under advisement as well. Anything else or anybody want to comment on this? Amr is definitely right that it should be not good to miss Jensen appointments. But any comments on this or any other business anybody would like to bring up? We've got about 7 minutes to go if need be. Okay. It sounds like we've covered everything we had in our agenda and nobody has anything to add. Amr is asking if the CG2 seat was announced on the list. I must admit I don't remember, so maybe we didn't. Anything else? Well, I guess we should do that. Okay, anything else on this? Before I close the meeting, unless somebody wants to raise your hand. Yeah. Okay. I see there's some discussion in the chat about this appointments, but nothing except we need to keep moving. Okay, Bill Drake, please go ahead.
All right, can I be heard? Is my sound working?
Yes, loud and clear.
I just thought I'd take a 2 second to ask if anybody had any questions about the nominating committee results that I announced yesterday. Or today, I don't remember when I did it. Yesterday. If anybody had any questions about that, I'm here as your representative and could certainly address them if there were any. If not, fine.
Thank you, Bill. I see that Ed has his hand up. Are you going to ask something of Bill?
I just want to congratulate Bill. I know two of the folks you selected for the board. They're both exceptional individuals, and you did an amazing job. And just want to thank you for your service, Bill. Absolutely amazing. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Ed. But, of course, you don't know that's true. But I'll take it anyway. No, I mean, I think from the standpoint of civil society and NCUC that we did as good as we could have given the complexity of the mix. But I didn't know if anybody had any particular issues they wanted to raise. I do think it would be good to, and I think Rafiq is doing this, to reach out to Khalid, who's, after all, an NCUC member and now on the board, and try and get him to come along and meet with you guys. I will not be in Hyderabad, but I think it'd be a good opportunity to build bridges with the new Brett and Martin also, through PIR, of course, has supported both NCUC and NPOC. So, I mean, I think, again, a friendly face there, essentially, that relationships could be leveraged and so on. And most directly of relevance here, I think having added Erica Mann to the GNSO Council will definitely make for an interesting new mix. So I hope it's useful, and just thought I'd say I'm here if anybody wants to say anything. Thanks.
Thank you, Bill. It was useful, I think, to at least to have given people opportunity to ask questions. But it seems, does anybody have any questions to Bill or anything else we should discuss? And we have 3 minutes we can still spare. Okay, it seems we just want to thank Bill for good results in the NAMCOM. Okay, Farzi, you have your, Farzina, you have your hand up. Please go ahead. Are you having audio troubles, Farzi? We can't hear you. Okay, it seems Farzi does not have working microphone or something, so let's see what she's typing. So, the question to Bill, I guess, how many female applications you received? If you don't, if this is not, if this is something you can tell us, Bill, please go ahead.
It was publicly reported the in the quarterly report cards that I circulated to the list. I think that there was, and now I'm just trying to make it up off the top of my head. I think that there were about 20 female candidates, of which maybe half for the board, I'd say. So the number of women that were being considered for the board was really very low. And once out of how many, Rachel? I don't know the numbers right in front of me, but again, you can check emails I sent previously. I think there were 80 or 90 candidates for the board of directors for the three slots, and I'm going to say 10 to a dozen maybe that had indicated a preference to be on the board. You know, it's a process of elimination where, you know, people go through them and say, this is a disqualifier, that's a disqualifier, and we do multiple rounds of voting and arguing, and I certainly argued consistently for a year that it was a top priority that we ought to have a woman in the mix of three that, at least one, in the mix of three that were appointed, but it was just ultimately, at the end of the day, when you've got, as I say, representatives of every silo in ICANN, all with their respective priorities and red lines and boxes to be ticked and all that, it just became the geometry of agreement on lots of candidates that I would have thought were totally plausible turned out to be Dauntingly complex, and this leads you then to the ones where broader agreement can be reached on, and that's how it ends up playing. So, recognizing that this is, and I didn't mean to get into a long thing on this, recognizing that this aspect of the outcome is probably not the most positive bit of news to come out of this year's NOMCOM process. I would emphasize again that in the next cycle, we need to do more effective and comprehensive outreach to increase the number of qualified women candidates, preferably ones who are not manifestly identified with particular arguments, battles, or so on that have long histories, because those always get trenched up by people who want to be oppositional. So perhaps some new blood from outside the ICANN community would be our optimal play there. But we'll have to see how this goes. But anyway, yes, let's try for next year certainly to get good applicants.
Okay, thank you, Bill. We are already 1 minute over time, but I'll hand the last word to Rafik, who's had his hand up for a while. Rafik, please be brief.
Oh, yeah, thanks. I think if we want to really help the NOMCOM, and talking from my experience as a representative for NCAC for 1 year, NOMCOM deal with the of candidates it gets. So if you want really more diversity and to help, we should try to outreach as much possible of candidates that we think they should be on the board. So it's really important to spread the message in many places and try to encourage people to run. It's not an easy process. And some people don't want to go through such process, but the more you expand the pool, the more you put you help the NOMCOM to match the diversity requirement. So that's what I can say. And I think for the process will start in coming months. And so it's a good idea to think about who you think that should be in the board and try to convince them to submit an application.
Okay, thank you very much, Rafik. And now we are 3 minutes over time, but let's close this meeting. Thank you, everybody. Had a pretty good attendance, despite the time being inconvenient for many. And councillors, have a good meeting tomorrow, and thank you, everybody, for being here. You can stop the recording.
Thank you very much, Brian. You may now stop the recording. Thank you very much, everyone, for attending the meeting today. Thank you.